Hello and welcome to another episode of the Australian Baby Boomer podcast. A few weeks ago, I interviewed Janny Lloyd, a former general practitioner with a 30-year interest in healthy ageing and the possibilities of slowing and even reversing the effects of ageing. This interest is based on research over this time, which is beginning to yield some very promising results. There are several non-fiction books by researchers that detail the findings in this area, and so rather than venturing down this path, Janny's in the process of writing a story of speculative fiction that explores the possibility from an experiential perspective. We've been using excerpts from Janny's story to explore the implications of living longer and healthier than ever before. This is episode 2 of these interviews with Janny, with another to come in the new year. Well, I'm looking forward to our second podcast, Janny. So I'm wondering if you can begin by telling us a little bit about why you wrote a novel about this area of work that you've studied for so many years. Why rather than write a factual piece of work?
Yeah. What I wanted to do was take all that I had learnt and experienced over the last 30 years and put it into a story where people could really grab hold of this as a possibility for real people, for everyday people. And we have enough science now to say that, you know, we can probably start to claim some sort of maintenance regeneration, as we spoke of last time. And I do feel, and many others feel, that we're getting very close to being able to claim, you know, to get to the point of efficient regeneration. So everybody needs to understand what that looks like, to get some sort of handle on, well, what would that mean to our lives and to society? So that was my reasoning. And also I feel that we do tend to take things in a little bit easier sometimes if we're entertained.
Yes.
It's that thing of, we start to relate to the characters and we think, oh, maybe I could be like that. So that's part of the reasoning for doing it.
Right. Well, you've asked me to read a little bit and then we can discuss what comes out of this little excerpt from the story. Chapter 11, I think.
That's the other thing too. We need to introduce the characters, I think, a little more. So we have Tom and Lynn, and they have been doing a clinical study over 2 years, which got them regenerating efficiently. And then 2 years prior to this episode, they actually decided with their new fitness and vigour to do a trip around Australia. And they're now in Adelaide and they're staying there for a while. And they've been asked to actually go to a hostel and talk about their experience. So Tom and Lynn have been here more than 75 years, and it is actually set in 2035.
Right.
It's a little bit in the future. So that's how we pick up the story.
That's great. So, a beautiful spring day dawned for their visit to the hostel. The birds were chirpy and plentiful. Tom loved the silver-eyed birds that seemed to be everywhere in this part of Adelaide. Tina greeted them when they first arrived and said that most of the residents were attending and that there seemed to be a little excitement. Tina said the manager was going to be joining them for most of the morning as well. "We're delighted to be here, Tina," said Lynn. "We're happy to share our experiences." They entered the community room and the conversation slowed to a stop when Tina introduced Tom and Lynn. She told of their participation in the clinical study and they'd been doing the regeneration program for almost 4 years. Tina handed over to Lynn, who began by sharing some of her personal background and how the regeneration program had assisted her health. Tom shared in a similar way. "Then we decided we hadn't seen enough of Australia, So close to 2 years ago, we packed up our caravan and went on the road. We've explored so many parts of Western Australia, Northern Territory, Central Australia and South Australia, and currently we're spending 6 months here in Adelaide. Our energy levels just seem to be increasing slowly every month. It might not be something that you're aware of day to day, however, over the months, it becomes obvious. Lynn and Tom then opened it up for questions. There were a few personal health questions and some questions about the holistic practices. Then one man asked, "What about the world population, the economics and the earth environment? What will happen to all the generations if we all continue to live on and on? There's a question of fairness to them and all the people of the world." Tom nodded and said, "Yes, I thought about that a lot in the early stages of the study and discussed it with others. Many sustainability and new economic practices have been taken up around the world over the last several years. This is creating more fairness. And my feeling is that those of us who choose to efficiently regenerate our physical body will, in time, become just as productive as others. Population experts are also saying that the world population will stabilise. Lynn has always had an interest in this area, so I'll hand over to her now. Maybe we can talk a little bit about that before we go on." And So that is a question that comes up quite a lot, Jenny, in terms of the world population, and that if this becomes a real possibility, which it looks like it is becoming from the studies around the world, at least a healthy life extension, which is really a wonderful thing in terms of, you know, people's quality of life, and it makes economic sense because people aren't in the hospital system. So what are your feelings about the world population? Can you maybe tease that out a little more?
Yeah. Well, last episode I gave the little example of if we all lived at the population density, the whole 8 billion of us, of Macau and Monaco, who have good longevity and good abundance, that we could all fit into a country the size not much bigger than Germany. So what that helps to do is give a little bit of perspective around the fact that we're really not running out of land space at this time. And so it's really more about social justice issues, distribution of income, sustainability of resources and those sorts of things. So they're the things that need to be addressed more. But just focusing a little more on the population thing, what we've found over the last 100 or so years with in Western countries in particular, with more contraception being available, more education of women, that people are making different choices, and in Western countries in particular, we now have virtually a zero population growth based on birth-death rates. So it does leave a lot of scope for different choices for people if they are able to move out of survival, because a lot of the people in other parts of the world are still very much in survival. And they often have children to help work farms, and all of those other considerations come in. And also their health care isn't good. They often have 10 children expecting 5 to survive, pretty much like we were 100 years ago. So all of that comes into the dynamic. And I think Lynn in the story goes on to talk a little bit more about that. Any other thoughts that you need now?
Well, I think, yes, I'll just say a little bit more, or we'll read a bit more of where Lynn comes in here.
Mm.
But I think what we can do also is talk about the way in which agricultural animals are taking up a lot of resources and land space, and how that might shift as well.
That's interesting, because I think we'll talk about that now before you go on to Lynn.
Right.
What I'm suggesting in the health foundation stones, and what we now know for health is that, you know, that idea of at least 80% plant-based whole foods, which would be a significant reduction of, you know, the requirement for cattle and sheep and chickens and so on in our Western world. And there are huge populations of those animals which take up huge amounts of space, which could be, of course, reused as natural diversity. We could replant with, you know, nature, natural plants. And the other thing is that it's just that whole shift in away from the idea that we need that as a source of nutrition. So I think that offers wonderful area for extra land for population, but also for regeneration and sustainability and all of those things.
And a healthier kind of life, way of living. Yeah, too,
environment.
Environment. All right. Lynn smiled. Tom knows my initial thoughts on entering nursing were to be a midwife. However, when our own children arrived, I was happy to stay with the general nursing, sometimes very part-time, sometimes more, and let go of more study. However, with my love of children and for humanity, I've been keen for children to be born into situations where they're nurtured and loved. The numbers of street children worldwide has been a concern for me, and I'm happy to say that in the last few years, the number has been steadily reducing. More equality and fairness with income and wealth distribution and more education worldwide has created more choice in many parts of life, one of which has been greater access to contraception. People and communities are being able to provide better quality of life for all. So that is an interesting thing too about the shift in this idea of having huge numbers of children, but having it doesn't preclude having children if there's people are living longer. It just means that children are being born into often, you know, more thoughtful situations perhaps.
Yeah, I think that's generally what we've seen in Western countries, is that the quality of life comes in more and the what that child's life is going to be like. And in some other countries in the world, there's still, you know, many, many children that are on the streets and in very difficult, abject poverty and survival conditions. And none of us want that. And somehow we need to be able to bring some of what has allowed us to grow beyond that to other parts of the world. And I think the other advantage I see is I think that the seniors provide generally a level of maturity around that that often new generations just have not developed. And I think that's where we could be of huge benefit as well in bringing those understandings to other parts of the world. So that's, once again, there's many roles for seniors to stay connected in society. And also people have to remember that this fiction story is actually set in 2035. Mm. So hopefully by then we'll have seen more and more reduction of, you know, children in difficulties. Yeah, so it's all of that whole shift in consciousness towards more quality of life to every human being that's on the planet, including seniors. You know, so it's an inclusive thing.
That's right.
So no matter what your stage of life or your skin colour or anything that may define you in any outer way, that the opportunities and quality of life is greater for everybody.
And it's about health, as you're saying, about healthy life extension. So a lot of the people that you're envisaging are able to contribute a lot more in terms of being physically able to care for children, so it becomes more of a community you know, it takes a village to raise a child type of thing.
Yeah, and, you know, that's where, you know, the thinking, our shifting consciousness is growing more to the global community, that we're not just about the quality of life for our local community, but we're looking, you know, much more at our impact on the whole of planet Earth and being... Because we are one species. That's the other thing too to look at, is that we are one organism called human being.
Yes.
Just divided into lots of separate parts.
That's right.
And we need to actually look after the organism, human organism. And yeah, so that's once again that shifting consciousness that tends to come with these foundation stones of health that I'm talking about. And it's very necessary for us to move beyond, in some ways, a level of emotional immaturity that we've... some of it has been biologically driven, circumstantial, you know, dog eat dog to just survive. Yeah. But at the same time, too, there's been this evolutionary process happening within us that's given us the ability to see beyond that existence. And that's what needs to be shared with everybody in the world. And, yeah...
So we're in a period of time at the moment where wars are very much in the forefront of the news, and you know how and a lot of wars are driven, I guess, by economic things, by people's belief systems in their difference from other people, by, you know, just pure, I don't know, the arms industry itself is quite a lucrative business, I would imagine, for a lot of people who would like to see these things continue. So, you know, I'm just wondering, you've mentioned the social inequality is one reason why there's that then gets pushed onto or seen as there's not enough resources for people to go around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we've gone through a time in our world where the war thinking has definitely reduced over the last 60 to 80 years. A lot of statistics were showing there's been less warfare happening in general. So that's a sign of some evolutionary process that we've been going through. But we've had little patches recently where that's flared again. And it really, you don't have to be a rocket scientist to see that underlying a lot of that is actually poverty. It's lack of... the people are in survival and they go into their survival programming. Now, that's something to talk about, actually, is that we have biological systems in our body and that are driven from the brain. And one of the very powerful ones is the fight, flight, freeze, which is survival programming. And that's run more by our lower brain, our hind brain. And when we get into a state of abject poverty, we see no immediate solution. We tend to go into fight, flight, aggressive, defensive sort of behaviour. So that's why, you know, weapons and all that sort of stuff have been involved. And also there's been the ego power aspects of that. But what we are developing as a species is the ability to go more into beyond survival in our brain. And that allows us to be more creative, to be able to communicate more, to go into that parasympathetic nervous system that I talked about the previous episode. And that, though, the structure around that tends to improve that is meditation, emotional literacy and mindfulness. That gets us more in that parasympathetic nervous system, which is a calming thing. It's much better for the body. It takes us out of that fight flight thing, and so we see, you know, not only the inner consequences of that, but the outer consequences of people being too much in that survival mode.
Yes.
Is that they then want to create wars, or they're not thinking creatively, they're not creating, they're not communicating.
That's right. And I think also, you know, even within affluent societies, there is an element of that in terms of the attitude of wanting to hang on to things, and so that becomes a fight type of mentality. Whereas I've when I've spoken with people who've come from more community-based places, you know, like such as in some of the African countries and places like that, where people all kind of live within a small community and they all contribute to one another, that's provided there's sufficient food and everything else, you know, that seems to be a healthier environment. And often people who've come to a Western society and have, you know, experienced that are able to draw that comparison. And
there's many levels of this process, this maturation process. And certainly if we go too far into the individual and, you know, instead of looking at the wholeness of the community and the human species, so we have this dance between our uniqueness and our unique expression and the community. So we're learning how to dance the dance, so be able to embrace all of it. But what we do is we find some cultures that are more into, you know, just being about community and not being about the individual so much. And so we get all these blends around the world. And it's about how do we get all of that dancing together. And I think that's the process that we're going through. I do think that it actually helps to maintain our health and longevity if we can find that balance.
And it is getting that, because often the blue zones are communities, aren't they? Where people are living, you know, in much greater numbers to 100 and beyond, they tend to be communities, they tend to be active, they tend to have real food rather than synthetic food and all of that kind of thing.
That's right. So there's a lot of value in that. And that's not to take away how valuable creativity and being unique is as well. You know, there's a sense of freedom and excitement and so on that comes with that. So once again, it's always about that balance. And I think if from my observation of what I know about the blue zones at the moment, the one thing that they may not have as much of is that creative innovation that we were talking about with Rachel Wu's work, where she gets the seniors to be creatively learning three new tasks. And they may not be doing that in some of the longevity blue zones. So I think that fires our creativity and our sense of purpose and our unique expression. And it gives us, like children, you know, they're into that passion for life and you know, how are they going to contribute and be in it. So I think it's a really interesting and delicate balance that we're...
It really is, and I think joy is so important. I have been looking at a lot of preparation for this interview today. I had a look at the super centenarians, and one of the things that I did notice about that was how often there was a lot of laughter and optimism, and I think that's... I wonder if you could comment on
that. I think that's the other thing I wanted to really bring through in my story, is that it seems to, you know, this idea of efficient regeneration and even the idea of what we can probably achieve and claim at this stage of a maintenance regeneration rather than buying completely into degeneration tends to engender a sense of joy and optimism and creative thought. People start creating their life again instead of thinking their life's over. So that it's just so linked in with that optimistic approach. But at the same time, you have to be a realist in a sense. So I like the term flexible optimism, that you look at the situation that's in front of you and you problem solve and what you need to do. But at the same time, you oscillate back into the optimism. So it brings, and we know, you know, this as a psychologist too, all sorts of chemicals and things are produced through that more positive optimism and that state of mind.
And I think even statistically they've demonstrated that optimistic people tend to live longer.
Yeah, that's right, exactly. So it's an interesting dance, and I think that we're unlocking a lot of the secrets. I really do think so, and I think the field of psychology has not been given enough media time or real attention by the medical realm as to how powerful that is as a preventative. And it's only probably because we're now getting the actual mechanisms identified, the actual nuts and bolts of the science, that we can really step forward and say, this is getting very, very real and very close and very powerful.
And I think this shift from a disease model to a more of a health model.
Yeah, wellness model.
So a preventative rather than fixing what's broken.
Yeah. Yeah, and there still will be a place for that sort of thing for quite a while.
Yeah.
We're not saying that that doesn't exist in any way, but it's that thing of, it's just a totally different way of approaching it. More psychologically, as much as, you know, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually, and that's also why I needed to do a story, because this is so vast in its scope that you have to look at all those different parameters.
That's right.
And so my characters are exploring all of this in the story.
Yes, well, I'll read a little bit more about from the story, and then we can talk about this. So, another person wanted to know if they'd decided what they might do for a job when the time came. Tom shared his intrigue with the tiny houses and their design, especially as his former career had been in architecture. Lynn mentioned her interest in permaculture. We will be finding out more about both of those when we get to the Sunshine Coast in Queensland, as we have a contact there. However, we'll not be rushing into new careers for a while yet, and we'll probably only work part-time. We both realised that in general, we did work a little harder than we needed to. Balance is important for health. And with the deep love of nature we've discovered, we want plenty of time to be present with the earth and in all its beauty. Tom mentioned that they'd noticed when people began to feel that they could be here for as long as they want, they tend to care for the earth, the environment, and all the people of the global village more. That's an interesting point there, because one of the big objections that is raised is about the ability of the environment to cope with more people if people decide to follow a regime and they start living longer. So maybe you could comment on that a bit more.
I think I'm going to talk a little bit about my own last 30 years now in this context.
Sure.
Certainly that love, with this shift in my own thinking around this, my love of the earth has grown and grown and grown, love of nature. So that the secondhand aspects of that are that you do become much more aware of the sustainability equation, and I've become much more of a minimalist. And not that that is necessarily 100% a requirement. It's not you have to instantly become a minimalist. Mm. It's more of a process that unfolds. And what I've found with using some of the spiritual, more spiritual or philosophical ideas around this process too, that sense of gratitude for, like, being in the now, enjoying what's in front of you, enjoying the earth, enjoying nature, takes you to a space of not needing so much stuff.
Mm.
You know, it's like you are just so overwhelmingly grateful for the now and just the little things that you don't need as much of the big things. Mm. And that doesn't mean you have to go back to being a cave person either.
No.
It's that balance thing. It's just that sense of appreciation, and the things that I do own, I really love, I really value.
Yes.
And so all of that sort of stuff comes into this shift in consciousness. And I think, you know, the idea that we could be here a long time, of course, is going to cause people to think, well, you know, we're not just out of here in 20 years or so we're going to have to look after this place, because, you know, we get our oxygen here and we've got to look after our home.
Mm.
So that happens as well. And the other thing that came up in that little part of the story is the idea of formal work and what we would do over the long term. Now, if we're going into an efficient regenerator, if we do get to that point in 2035 and we're becoming efficiently regenerating, it is not going to happen overnight. It's a process. So, you know, there might be, you know, like 20 years before you get the vigour of somebody that's maybe been here 30 years, a normal person that's been here 30 years. So it's not going to be a really fast process. And so that means also that you're not going to have the stamina really to want to do a full-time job for a while. But you can certainly start to, once the stamina starts to improve, you can definitely look at part-time positions and... I think the seniors will be as incredibly creative as people have always been. They will be creating new businesses, and some of my characters actually do that. There's a character that is going to become a reuse person. So he's had a side thing where he liked to reupholster things. So he and a mate are going to, you know, get used furniture and revamp it and start a business just part time. So incorporating craft and all of that.
And creativity. And the whole thing,
So it's that thing of reinvention. Which most people that have been here 70 odd years have quite often reinvented themselves to some degree already in that 70 years. It's a little bit different to the way people lived, 50 or 60 years ago, where they often had one job and one place of work and all of that, and that was it. Whereas a lot of people in recent times have been, you know, had something for 10 or 15 years and then they've retrained and so on. So we've already been doing it to some degree. So all we have to factor in really is the sustainability and also that we are perhaps not taking jobs from other people as well. So we probably won't talk about that now, this idea of universal basic income or something like that to free up the new generations as well. But, you know, there is going to be so much ability for us to just do incredibly innovative and creative things with also that we've had 70 years of doing that already.
That's right. And, you know, I think also it's not just about the people who've lived a long time doing that. It's also about as society shifts, it may be that people generally work part-time rather than full-time, which is more of a balanced, healthier kind of lifestyle. And what we're talking about, I guess, is not just about people, you know, starting these processes when they're, you know, 70 or 80. It's about people, you know, in their 20s or whenever, just being aware of how to set themselves up for a healthy life and an enjoyable
That's right. Yeah, and that's the thing. This story is focusing on seniors because it's very relevant to seniors. It gets to a point where it becomes very relevant.
It focuses the attention, doesn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, that's right. And it's so if we can do that and see these shifts in seniors, you know, that's just going to give so much to other generations about what they can do if they're starting when everything is still regenerating, you know, normally and efficiently. So, I mean, it's just... You know, it's quite an extraordinary picture if you really let it unfold in your mind. But all the details of the thing will ultimately be, to some degree, individually driven for you, just as the previous years of your life have been. So that's the ultimate, isn't it?
All the
time remembering that we're part of this human whole and we're part of the whole of nature on this earth, so all of it has to be understood and factored in.
Yes.
The next part of this interview will be posted in 2024 January. Thank you for listening. Until next time.